Welcome to Merrick's Experts, the podcast that provides analysis of current affairs in China.
The National People's Congress, China's parliament, has kicked off its second yearly session in Beijing on the 5th of March. My name is Johannes Heller-John, and to talk about what we have learned from this year's NPC, I'm joined by Merrick's lead analysts, Nis Grünberg and Jacob Gunter. Nis and Jacob, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Johannes.
Yeah, happy to be here to discuss the NPC.
Premier Li Qiang delivered his first government work report on the opening day of the NPC. And this is traditionally a chance to see how the government is framing its own achievements, or lack thereof, the goals it sets for itself for the near-term future, and problems it sees on the way. Nis, what did we learn from this year's work report?
Well, I think it's a very moderate kind of work report. There's no big surprises. We didn't expect surprises, to be honest, so nothing really out of the box here. It was a little bit interesting to see Li Qiang. This is his first work report and the first annual conference and work report from the new leadership after the party congress and the NPC last year. To summarize, not really a lot unexpected. I'll let Jacob discuss the economics of things. But politically speaking, there's not a lot of new stuff here. You know, the work priorities that I mentioned are almost exactly the same as last year. The so-called problem page, outlining the issues the leadership sees as priorities for the coming year are also the same, more or less. So it's not a lot of things that stick out. What you can say is that priorities are clearly on development technology, you know, supporting the push for tech self-reliance and modernization. That is really strong here in the work report. You know, security, always a very strong focus of Xi Jinping. That's also very clearly here. As an afterthought more, it's socioeconomic issues that still prevail. And of course, the general malaise in the business and in the economy and the business sector, which has been outlined as the main priority for this year's work. So there are a lot of signals, top-level signals, general language about supporting the economy, getting things back on track. I think the relatively optimistic growth target of around 5%, which under the current conditions is difficult, speaks to that. But the problem is there's not a lot of concrete stuff that is supporting how they want to achieve that. No big stimulus packages, but also not really a lot of structural policy that can spur consumption and give more money to households. I'm not sure how they will pull that off.
The text of this government work report, as many official speeches by government and party leaders, are often closely analyzed for language. And I'm not sure if you had time to look at this, but are there any key phrases or words that came up in this year's report that signal like some kind of shift in thinking or a new priorities or new thoughts that are introduced into the language of the party?
Well, something that sticks out is that the word security appears a lot. There seems to be really a heightened awareness of China being in some kind of security threat, you know, which is reflecting the general language that we've been hearing over the past months. Technology is everywhere in this report. So really also, again, reflecting this general push for technological self-reliance and modernization. And a lot of referencing to Xi Jinping and Xi Jinping thought also. So it is really making clear who is the boss here. I think Li Qiang, he said it best a few days ago when he said that the main job of the State Council and the state is to implement the party's decisions. So it's made quite clear here who's making decisions and who's kind of only implementing them. This kind of logic is also, I think, propped up by the way that the organic law has been amended. This amendment of this law is up for vote, or it's going to be passed by this NPC. The organic law is kind of the law that organizes how organizations in the state apparatus work. So, you know, hierarchies, who's in charge of what and so on. And it has been amended in a way that the constitutional duty of the State Council to follow the party's leadership becomes more clear. So, you know, it is now constitutional, it is made even more clearly constitutional duty of the state apparatus to just do the party's bidding. And that really, again, is not a big surprise when you have followed the you know, Chinese politics over the past 10 years. But it is really codifying all these things even more clearly. And I think the you know, the language, the events, and the focus on Xi Jinping thought, even in the work report, is underscoring this trend.
So, Jacob, what did the report tell us about China's economic situation?
Yeah, so the general tone of the work report delivered by Premier Li Qiang, you know, it starts off by looking at the last year and sort of grading the government's performance and how the economy did. And then the latter half kind of looks at the broader economic agenda for the coming year. So starting off with how things went last year, there was a pretty striking tone that all the bad things that happened were basically the result of external or international developments. It's not that there were any policy failures, not that we would expect the party state to admit to such failures, but there was a really clear emphasis that whatever problems did emerge was the fault of the trade wars, the tech wars, from the Americans, from de-risking from the European side, from broader tech frictions, and, as Beijing often likes to say, efforts to contain China's rise, that this is what, you know, slowed things down. But looking at some of the numbers that they release, including the ones that they have set in terms of targets for the next year, I think that they've taken a relatively pragmatic stance that the economy will continue to kind of sputter along. So the GDP growth target for 2024 was set at around 5, which is the same that it was last year, around 5. And even though the 2023 outcome ultimately came to 5.2%, you know, we still see the same target being set. And I would expect that we'll probably see, you know, weaker GDP growth than we did last year. But why is that pragmatic? Well, it shows enough confidence that the market will see some degree of a recovery, and that the floor in the economy won't, you know, completely fall out. But it also sets expectations clearly for officials that they shouldn't go out of their way to be stimulating and juicing growth as much as possible. It's really important to maintain that kind of discipline. There's a lot of language in the work reports about the importance of high quality development and high quality growth rather than just growth for the sake of growth. So clearly they wanted to strike a bit of a balance. They also set pretty pragmatic job creation targets and unemployment targets. So they hope to create about 12 million new jobs, and they want employment to remain around 5.5%. So again, giving themselves some flexibility. But in any case, with all of these numbers and taking a relatively pragmatic kind of middle of the road perspective and setting some of these goals, I think what we see is that there's a recognition that the target set for 2024 coming out of 2023 will be a little tricky to hit some of these things. But nonetheless, it's trying to project just enough confidence, just enough sort of balance and middle of the road perspective to, again, to kind of muddle through.
So in your view, what economic priorities for the near-term future emerged at the MPC this year?
Yeah, so in many ways, it was a steady as she goes sort of approach. We see a lot of the priorities that are set for the coming year are very, very similar to what they were last year and very similar to what they were the year before. So it's pretty clear what the Xi Jinping economic agenda is. And it's actually quite remarkable that those policy agendas have not meaningfully shifted that much. Because as boring as it is to say, well, they're going to kind of do the same thing that they did last year, it is quite remarkable in the sense that the situation is changing. The economy is not performing the way that that people in China expect it to perform. So expectations are not being met and the economy is underperforming. But the policy agenda has not meaningfully changed, which shows a lot of discipline in terms of the leadership in Beijing, that they have kind of medium to long-term goals that will not be disrupted by sort of the day-to-day or rather year-to-year changes on the ground. But it also maybe calls into question, you know, maybe this is long-term planning and long-term discipline, but it also might be that, you know, Beijing has become a little too obsessed with some of these priorities set by Xi Jinping, and that the lack of responsiveness could actually be a problem moving forward. But specifically, the big priorities that stick out is It feels like, you know, probably 70 or 80% of the priorities for the next year are technology or technology related. So there's a lot of talk about the new development model, about these new productive forces. There's, you know, big emphasis on science, technology, green transition, which relates to technology, broader self-reliance pushes, all of these things that also tie back to what I said originally about the problems in China's economy are the result of external forces. Well, technology is the main avenue through which those external forces have disrupted things in Beijing's narrative. So thinking of the tech war in particular. And so technology is the problem, but it's also the solution. It is a technology gap that must be fixed. And this is the clear priority throughout the entirety of the rhetoric surrounding the entire NPC. And then beyond that, the other sort of 20 to 30% is very much focused on dealing with, you know, certain domestic risks. This is also a long time part of the language that Xi Jinping uses. And specifically, what we're focused on here is the real estate bubble and debt levels. These are viewed as systemic risks, that Beijing cannot tolerate these growing indefinitely, and that there's a significant need to not let the bubble pop, as it happens in market economies, but rather to use a series of different instruments and measures to wind down the real estate bubble and prevent a major crisis or any sort of crash from happening. And then on debt, it's really about trying to find ways to deleverage, especially your local and provincial governments, where I think even Beijing doesn't fully 100% have clarity as to the degree of that local government and provincial government debt, because local officials are very good at hiding these things. But nonetheless, these are kind of systemic risks within the economy that do show up as priorities in the work report.
One thing that maybe is worth mentioning is, as part of the general push for technology development, for better manufacturing, for developing, becoming self-reliant in technology, a really big part of this, and, you know, this is the success story of China, is green tech or clean tech, green energy, new energy, clean tech. This is becoming more and more system relevant and system important for the economy as such. Last year, around 10% of all fixed asset investments went into clean tech, different from most other sectors. So it's becoming a really important sector for growth. That's, of course, a good story to tell, because it's good for climate, it's good for decarbonization. But I think, you know, China's success in this area will also be exacerbating the problems that the European Union and the Americans have with Chinese exports of clean tech, which is challenging our home competitors. So this is an attention that's not going away, but it's probably just getting more pronounced as China's doubling down on this development of tech, of domestic technology leaders in clean tech, whilst Europe and the US are trying to protect the last golden eggs at home.
We've been waiting in vain so far for a third plenum of the Central Committee of the Chinese Communist Party. So it's a party event, and this has historically been the place to announce economic and social reforms, and it hasn't happened when it should have been, probably happened end of last year, early this year. Did we learn anything about the party's reform agenda at the NPC this year?
We didn't learn very much that was new. Speaking of like the third plenum, I think one of the many reasons why we haven't seen a third plenum is that Xi Jinping feels less pressure to have one, as a kind of hallmark signal about his economic policy agenda, because historically a third plenum was really important during the first days of a new administration. So, when Hu Jintao comes to power, a third plenum is quite important. When Xi Jinping comes to power, his first third plenum is extremely important. The document that they produced as a result of that was pretty widely misread in terms of the details, but it was well read in terms of the importance. And so maybe he feels that we don't really need to have something so big, because Xi Jinping economic thought has become relatively clear in terms of what his policy agenda is. And in terms of the broader reform agenda and such, the big thing that's really missing from the NPC is any significant measures or plans to deal with broader socioeconomic stresses and to deal with a lot of the institutional shortcomings of the Chinese system. here in Europe, we often complain about like the pension system not being good enough and the healthcare system not being good enough, unemployment benefits being, you know, they all these things have problems. But the problems that we have in those systems and institutions in Europe pale in comparison to what exists in China, where the pension system gives paltry sums to retirees that need more and therefore rely on their children and their grandchildren, and that the healthcare costs, that, you know, yes, you have public systems for this, but the shortcomings are so significant that people have, out of practical need, you know, significant savings and such to kind of buttress medical expenses should they emerge. And then on the unemployment front, you end up with, you know, really minimal systems. And so whether you're a young unemployed, you know, university educated person, or you're an older migrant worker who wasn't able to find work coming back to the factories this year in the cities, there's not a sufficient social safety net to take care of you. And so you have to turn to family to take care of you instead. So the lack of any announcement of institutional reforms in those kinds of socioeconomic areas is quite striking, as is the lack of any serious discussion about like difficult decisions that will have to be made at some point, that it's not a matter of ideology, it's a matter of math, that you have the demographic crisis, but you also have like the retirement ages in China are exceptionally low. China has caught up in terms of life expectancy, but the retirement ages remain so low that, you know, maybe even the French are quite jealous of them. But very little discussion seems to have taken place. And this, you know, they're given only lip service in the government work report.
I think Jacob mentioned the main points, and I really second the low priority socioeconomic reform has played over the past years. You know, we have heard a lot of talk about common prosperity, about, you know, growing demand, support for private economy, growing household wealth, and everything, you know, all the signals you would expect from the government. But we haven't seen really tangible policy that is supporting these signals. So whenever a policy is made in China, you have a kind of a security political control side of things, and you have a an economic prop up side of things. But security and stability is always trumping economics currently, and you just feel that, right? There's not enough power behind these smaller initiatives to get incomes up and so on, compared to all the efforts that are made to control the economy, control growth into the right direction, guide growth into the right direction. You know, it doesn't show as the key priority right now. And it shows in the work report, it shows in the comments, tech and, you know, security issues are at the very top, together with Xi Jinping thought. And at the lower end, really socioeconomic issues. They are still there, they're important, they say all the right things, but I want to see tangible policy before I believe that they really mean it serious.
It has been customary that the premier, in this case, Li Qiang, and his first government work report that we mentioned in the beginning of the podcast, that the premier is doing a press conference at the end of the NPC. This time it was announced that this will not happen. What do you make of this decision? Is this relevant or not?
Well, scrapping the press conference of a premier is significant, but it is one step in a direction that we've seen over the past months and years. I think two things are appearing here in this action. One is that Xi Jinping really is casting a super closed information environment. You know, everything that gets out needs to be vetted. It needs to be framed in the right light. It needs to be curated in the right context. So there's just no room for an open mic kind of situation for a key leader. That is not Xi Jinping. The only other person really that in the top leadership has rights to speak in front of media and like real journalists is probably Wang Yi, but everything else has been scrapped. So, you know, it's part of this push to create a very close curated information environment. And here a premier's press conference doesn't seem to be on the menu. And the other thing is, of course, that Xi Jinping as the figurehead of everything political needs to be put on an even higher pedestal, right? So it doesn't go that the premier has a platform to talk to people that Xi Jinping doesn't have. So I think this is also just showing this kind of personification of everything political in the person of Xi Jinping. He's the only politician that is allowed to speak, that is allowed to communicate political messages, and everything and everyone below him is just implementing his thought. So I think cutting the press conference is unfortunate, because I think actually there's a lot of value, you know, also for observers. It was appreciated. A lot of goodwill was shown in this very information poor environment that China has become. And scrapping even that is, doesn't send the right signal, but it surely follows a trend that we've seen over the past months.
Thank you, Jacob and Nis, for your time and your insights.
No, thanks. Thanks for putting this together, Johannes.
Thanks, Johannes. Always a pleasure.
And if you want to know more, dear listener, about the research that we do at Merix, you can find links to the research profiles of Nis and Jacob in the show notes. Thank you for listening. Until next time, goodbye.
You have been listening to Merix Experts, the podcast from the Max Hutto Institute for China Studies in Berlin. If you want to learn more about our work, please visit us at merix.org.